Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
He is the color commentator for the Warriors on TV, sometimes on the radio as well with Tim Roy, and a contributor here at 95.7 The Game, Jim Barnett. Good enough to join the Damon Bruce Show. Ray Ratto along with us today. Jim, good to have you again. Before Game 2, you and I spent quite a bit of time in the media dining room, and you were talking about the frustration with guarding Lou Williams. And there, not even 2 hours after, you and I were having a vivid conversation where you were physically standing up, demonstrating a different way you'd like to see Lou Williams guarded. Everything you feared came to life before our eyes. You know, yeah, basketball, brother.
He got better in the second game than he was in the first game.
Yeah.
Ironically.
He really, really did. That was an unbelievable defeat. The Warriors quit playing. We've all seen that. What's your biggest takeaway? What's the biggest lesson?
Well, the biggest lesson is you can never let up, even if you're up by 31 points with under 20 minutes to go in a game. And even, you know, to end the third quarter, they put Curry back in there. He has a bad turnover. They end up scoring the other way. Sometimes those things happen, but you just never would expect it to happen with this team, as good as they are. And, you know, tonight's going to tell a lot. Tonight, in the first 5-6 minutes of the game, is going to tell a lot. And you certainly have to be on your best game here tonight and get a win. You certainly don't want to encourage the Clippers anymore and give them any more positive reinforcement, because they're already flying pretty high and feeling pretty cocky about it and feeling very good. You don't want to be down 2-1 going into game 4 on the opponent's court. There's no question about it. What do they have to do? I really do think they've got to get Durant more involved early on and take Beverly out of the game, and that maybe posting him up a little bit down low and swinging the ball around, not letting him dribble into things, and he has his back to the basket. And if Beverly fronts him, they may get weak side help. Someone, you move and you have good spacing, someone's going to be open. If not, you throw it into him, and Beverly's behind him. All he has to do is take one little back dribble and turn around and shoot right over him, because he can shoot right over anybody in the league. So I'm hoping he's having a big game tonight and quiet and making Beverly very quiet.
How much did you think Durant's game 2 performance had to do with him and his level of engagement, or Patrick Beverly's level of engagement?
Well, I think it disrupted him certainly, because he got 4 offensive fouls and he's trying to unleash himself from the grasp. And that's why I think if he has the ball in his hands, that they're liable to call a foul more likely with him trying to make an offensive move and going up for a shot. But I wouldn't want to give him the ball 30 feet from the basket and say, okay, break him down. He's capable of doing that, but I think that's asking for trouble. I think you got to make it easier on him, and you got to put him in a position to succeed and not fail. And, it's not all on Kevin Durant, certainly, no question about it. They've got to find some way to defensively stop that combination of Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. I mean, Harrell's killing him. He's hit 20 out of 24 shots. He's averaging over 25 a game, and incredible shooting. They're not keeping him out of the middle very much at all. But it's Lou Williams. When he's averaging 30.5 points a game, he had, 39 the last game, and he's got 20 assists. The last game he had 36 and 11 assists. So he's accounting for a lot of points, and somehow they haven't been able to find any solution. They've tried different things. They want weak side help and so forth. And I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to watch tonight closely and see if they just say to Clay or Andre Iguodala, whoever it is, just stay in front of him as best you can here. We don't care which way. Just make it hard and keep him out of the lane where he comes down. And all of a sudden, I've never seen so many breakdowns defensively where he came in and there was only a big showing, and Clay's kind of behind him, and it's a two-on-one inside the free throw line, down from the free throw line down to the basket. It's a two-on-one against a big. Maybe it's Devon Looney. Maybe it's Andrew Bogut. So they've got to do a better job of that. I know they have a pick and roll up top. Heck, I'd tell Clay to go underneath the screen every time if he's going to hit from the outside and bomb all the way. Take a chance on that, because most of the time he's looking to drive to the basket.
In terms of dealing with Montrezl Harrell, are they better off with Bogut and Looney, or did they need the center depth of having Cousins there as well? Simply defensively, I'm not talking about what he would give you offensively, but can they defend Harrell more effectively without Cousins or with him?
They can defend Harrell and any center in the league, particularly one who's scoring inside, with Cousins. That was the great recipe that you had, because I'm thinking if they had to play OKC and Steven Adams, and if you have to play Jokic again, Denver, he made him look like a high school kid the last game they played them. And he is, even if Montrezl Harrell gets the ball inside and Cousins is in the vicinity and he can recover, he's going to bother Harrell. No, there's no question about it. They missed DeMarcus Cousins defensively. I'm not worried about the offense. I think you could have Cousins play 32 minutes a night and give you 4 points, and I think the Warriors would win all the way through the playoffs just simply because of his defensive presence and his size, his rebounding, his negating somebody inside, definitely.
Jim Barnett, brought to you by Victory Toyota in Seaside, where they'll give you a splash cash dealer discount off MSRP on top Toyota rebates on the all-new 2018 and 2019 models. So tonight, it feels like it is the fork in the road. We're about to go in the insanity of a Warrior reality of looking at a 2-1 hole against the Clippers, or we're back to normal. Are you leaning getting back to normal? Nobody circles the wagons and rebounds from a loss quite like the Warriors. We've seen that over the last few years here. I'm expecting a brass knuckle victory from them tonight, and will be wildly disappointed with almost anything else.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and I'm definitely their reputation, who they are. They've been to the finals 4 straight years. They know what's on the line. They know what's at stake, and I would definitely think they're going to come out with a lot of intensity, and that includes all 5 starters, and they want to right the ship, and they want to send a message, a strong message. But I think it's a very pivotal game, and this is a game they have to do it and then maintain that. So we're going to find out. We're going to find out whether the antics of Patrick Beverley can get under the skin and steal a series or not. I just don't think he can do that. And I think you have to deflate him. And I think Kevin Durant, if he wants to do it, is just the man to do so.
Jim, thank you very much. Great to talk to you. Appreciate you checking in with us on game day. Really appreciate it. Enjoy your time down in L.A.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for having me on.
Jim Barnett here on 95.7 The Game. Warriors coming up, and we're about to, thanks to Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises, play a little Steve Kerr back from you. He joined Ray and I yesterday. Really good conversation. He was obviously still very down about the DeMarcus injury and the embarrassing defeat. It's not really the tone I've ever heard in Kerr's voice before. So we have that coming up in just a minute. Right now, though, I got Reed, Daly City. What do you got, Reed?
Hey, fellas. How are you today?
Well, thank you.
Good. Yeah, you know, I called in previously and I said we got to get Bogut. Thank God we did, because it looks like he's going to save our season. He's the last thing we've got that'll save us. But I think after what KD did to us the other night, we got to start Iggy. I mean, he deserves it. Let's get back to the 2015 team.
Wait. Reed, is your phone call really about bringing Kevin Durant off the bench?
If Lou Williams can do it, why can't he?
Stop it, Reed. You're embarrassing yourself and everyone in Daly City with this phone call. I love you.
Thank you for listening. In defense of Daly City here, unless we get a lot of calls saying that Kevin Durant should be benched, I think the city should be left out of it.
Okay.
I think Reed basically has to live with this and let him live with that.
The fact that Daly City has to live with Reed is maybe the greater concern.
But that's still not Daly City's fault. I mean, unless they're going to start grading people on their hot take ability, they should live wherever they want.
How about this? Go ahead, put Iguodala in the starting lineup and have Durant be your five. Do that, or ask Draymond to be your five. If you wanted to go Hamptons, I wouldn't mind that. We did ask Steve Kerr about that, and he didn't say that anything that extreme was going to be seen. Not tonight, anyways. 888-957-9570. More of your calls can be lined up right there. But as soon as we return, we've got a Steve Kerr interview for you here on 95.7 The Game. Right now, I've got Elena Matzorkis for you, giving you an update. And here's what's coming up later on the station.
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Steve Kerr, Warriors head coach, is along with us. Steve, we thought we were going to be talking to you on Friday. We're very happy to talk to you today. Obviously, it's been a weird 24 hours. That was such an unexpected defeat, and you, I'm sure, have watched the tape. What did you see on that tape, Steve? And welcome. Thank you for joining us. What did you see that bothered you the most?
I think we just sort of disconnected, you know, mid-third quarter. When we got up 31, we just, you know, to that point, we had played brilliant defense all throughout game one and then, you know, for 2.5 quarters of game two. And then it looked like all of a sudden, it was like a preseason game in Bakersfield. Like, what happened? We just stopped playing defense and can't do that, you know, in a playoff game against a good team like the Clippers. And so all of a sudden, it becomes a shootout and we had foul trouble. You know, our rotations get altered, and the momentum just swung wildly the other way.
Losing focus has been a theme this year for the Warriors, and it's understandable. It really is in the regular season. This is the postseason, and it's unforgivable then when you lose focus, when all 48 minutes should be played like the score wasn't even being kept. You know, that's what fans want. That's what you and your coaching staff want. Is there anything you and your staff can do to inject moments of urgency, like just have a whistle, and if you sense them losing focus, you start blowing the whistle like it's a shark warning at a beach or something?
That's what timeouts are for. We tried to, inject some just alertness in the timeouts, like, hey, there's a long way to go. You know, but as I said, in an NBA game, once you lose momentum, it's tough to get it back. And the Clippers played great, you know. Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams had it going, and we had a couple shots late that would have sealed it we couldn't make, but I didn't particularly like the play I drew up out of the timeout late in the game, and so I didn't think any of us were really on our games, you know, that second half, and it's disappointing, but you know, it's 1-1, so there's plenty of basketball left.
Do you have sort of a statute of limitations on how long you can reference this to the players before you get off it and assume that they've got the lessons learned?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you don't want to keep referencing a game for too long because you got, you know, the next one starts and that becomes the important one. So the statute of limitations probably runs to tomorrow night at 7:30, you know. So we'll have a shoot around tomorrow in the morning and we may reference the game then. But after that, you know, you just move on to the next one.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, and look, we want to move on to the next one too. We want to talk about how you plan on attacking Game 3 and how you hope to see Kevin come out in Game 3. I know you today said, you know, 20, 30 shots, let's see it. He, talking to the media either right before you or after you, said, you know, I'm not about 20, 30 shots. That's not necessarily what I've been doing. He gets ejected in Game 1. He fouls out of Game 2, you know, 9 turnovers to outpace his shots taken. Is that Kevin's choices, or is that Patrick Beverley?
I think Beverley's done a good job on him, but, you know, I think Kevin would be the first one to tell you that that was not his best game. I mean, he had a lot of turnovers and fouls. And as far as the field goal attempts, you know, for the entire time that he's been here, Kevin, Clay, Steph all average 17, 18 shots a game. And in a playoff game, you know, you expect your best players to be even more aggressive because they're the ones who are able to get good shots when the defense is not allowing any good ones out of your offense. I think we need him to be aggressive, and I think he will be. I know that he likes, you know, being a dual threat as a scorer and a passer offensively, and he's really good at that. And generally, he reads the game and whatever's necessary. I mean, you've watched him in the playoffs the last couple of years. when he's at an advantage, he's gone at people. You know, he's been finals MVP twice in a row. So he understands that you know, when he's got to attack and when he's got to assert himself. So when the time's right, he'll do that.
In what ways will the Clippers try to play differently at home than they did in Oakland, if there are any? I mean, or do we already know what they are and who they are?
Well, I think they've gained some confidence now with that win. I mean, that's the problem when you let somebody off the hook. All of a sudden, you know, there's some belief there. And so, you know, they played really well down the stretch and took care of business, and now they're heading home. So I think they'll be more confident, and they'll be more excited. They're now thinking, all right, we can do this. And so our challenge gets tougher. They're going to play better. I think they'll play better at home.
Definitely want to create a little bit more of an optimistic tone here, but we still got one more thing that absolutely sucks to talk about, and it's DeMarcus Cousins. I feel so bad for him, Steve. I'm sure you do too. How's he holding up? How's your team holding him up?
He's crushed, as he should be. I mean, you think about what DeMarcus went through all last year, recovering from that Achilles injury, and he's been waiting to play in the playoffs his whole career, and one game and 5 minutes in, that's it. It was really sad. I mean, I feel horrible for him. Good news is it's not an injury that's going to hurt him long term. He should be fine in a couple of months and should do well in free agency. But this is not, you know, what he signed up for. He wanted a long playoff run, and I wanted to enjoy that with him, and it's just a real shame.
Have you felt the need to talk to him a lot about this, or is he happier when you just leave him be at a time like this?
I think in the immediate aftermath, you know, most players don't want to talk to anybody. You just want to go home and get away. And that's what DeMarcus has done. He wasn't at practice today. I didn't expect him to be there. And I've texted him, and we'll connect soon. But right now, I think he's just trying to get away.
If I told you a month and a half ago that Andrew Bogut would be starting a playoff game for you, you would have laughed me off the phone, Steve. I mean, it's unbelievable that we've come full circle right back to Bogut, or full boomerang in this case.
We wouldn't have been able to envision this, but, you know, when we started talking to him and his agent about this possibility, this was exactly what we had in mind, that, you know, this gives us depth at the center position, and if something does go wrong, if we get an injury, you know, having Bogut would just be a coup for us, because you just don't find guys like him, you know, in terms of free agency or, you know, just making a trade for another player. And so we got a guy who is big-time player. He's a champion. He fits our system. He knows the league, so we're lucky to have him.
So if he was that important, why didn't you guys get him before?
He didn't want to be here, Ray. He wanted to play for the Sydney Kings.
Well, okay. Then, has Bob Myers failed in impressing upon him that the Sydney Kings are not as important as the Golden State Warriors?
Ray, do we have to do this?
No, we really don't. We really don't. I mean, I don't want to talk about Monday night anymore. Thursday sort of... Okay, let's try this. Is Game 4... the pivotal game that's going to basically determine this series? Or is it tomorrow night? Because somebody's going to be up 2-1 one way or the other. But it seems to me that Game 4 is where the tale will be told.
If you're analyzing everything, it's a solid take, let me put it that way. You know, generally speaking, in a 2-1 series, Game 4 is critical. But we've been on both sides of that. We won a series when we were down 3-1. We lost a series when we were up 3-1. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in any of that. I just feel like we just have to go out and play aggressively and solidly. And if we do that, I think we'll be in great shape. I like our chances against anybody in a 7-game series, because over time I think our talent will show and our will. And I believe in these guys. They've won 3 championships. They've been through everything. They've seen everything. I like our chances whether we're up 2-1 or down 2-1.
How hard is it to maintain rhythm in a game where we're stopping like every 30 seconds to shoot free throws? And I'm not asking you to criticize officials here, but just how much does a free throw heavy game affect the tone your team goes out there to set?
I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's part of strategy sometimes in the playoffs, and it's definitely something that the Clippers are trying to do. You know, we shot 45 free throws, so it's not like the refs weren't calling them. They called plenty of them.
Yeah, almost too many.
The reality is they – what's that?
I thought too many. It's the playoffs. Half these things should just be let them play. You know, everyone's allowed to play with a little emotion and anger, and it's the playoffs. Let them play.
Well, that's another view. So if you think of it that way, if you're a coach, and Pat Riley used to do this with the Knicks and Chuck Daly with the Pistons, and you tell your players, you know, just foul every time, because, you know, if you're really physical and you know how to kind of get away with stuff, you do that in the playoffs because the refs aren't going to want to call too many fouls, because the reality is they could. If they called it like it was a regular season, they would call a foul on almost every play. There's two different sets of rules, one in the regular season, one in the postseason. And the league probably wouldn't want to hear me say that, but it's the truth. So you have to adapt and adjust, and that's what we try to do.
Steve, you are a kind and patient man for dealing with the both of us. I appreciate that today, and I wish you good luck in Game 3, where I think the Golden State Warriors are set to come out with a brass-knuckles performance. Do you feel that same way?
We'll be ready to play.
I like that. Coach, thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks. Take care.
We'll be ready to play. And I think that's the theme. We'll be ready to play the entire game is the request, and I do think that they understand the theme, and I think they meet the request tonight. John Dickinson will be checking in just a little bit from down in Los Angeles. Again, we've had a little time to think about it, hear what Kerr had to say. Really, the tone in his voice, I don't think Steve Kerr is that devastated that he's in a 1-1 series with the Clippers heading into the third game of the playoffs. I think he's devastated that DeMarcus Cousins is done. And I think that that was the residue that you could hear in what sounded like a man who was... It was halfway unhappy. I mean, Steve Kerr, you know, the old let him hear you smile. Normally you can hear that guy smile. And he did giggle a little, but I think he is heartbroken for DeMarcus Cousins. I think this team is a little bit.
Oh, no, I think that's true. But I think if he has to take a loss, I think that thrills him. Because you don't have to show a lot of tape. And you don't have to do a lot of talk. And you don't have to point your finger. You don't have to raise your voice. Everybody else is doing that for you. So, no, I think if you're going to have to go down, that's the way to go down. Because at least if you're a coach, I mean, it's you'd rather be up 2-0, but you don't get that choice. These are of all the possible scenarios for a loss, which one do you want?
Let's say we're walking around the parade route about an hour before it starts going Lake Merritt time. Are we actually looking back at the 31-point embarrassment as a blessing in disguise?
Tell me about what happens in game 3 and 4.
We'll find
because
out.
Because if they lose game 2 in the second round the same way, or if they, not a blow a 31-point lead, but have a game handled and then let it get away, no, it'll be an ongoing theme because narratives feed themselves.
888-957-9570. Before we check in with JD, who's got his boots on the ground at Staples, this is Kazmir, Walnut Creek. Kazmir.
Hey, guys. Great show, Ray, Damon. Hey, just a quick two questions I like to ask about KD. And first one is, do you think if KD was like 10 to 15 pounds heavier with muscle, would Patrick Beverly even be a question? And then my second question is do we bring back JaVale McGee next year? Great show, guys.
The answer is no and no to both of your questions, because it wasn't that Beverly was pushing Durant off of a spot. It's that he was frustrating his dribble and he was restricting his motion. A little more weight doesn't unrestrict Durant's motion. It might actually slow him down a little. So more weight, no. JaVale, I loved JaVale. JaVale was at the same time this team's best bench player at times. He was their best starting center at times. He was their team mascot pretty much at all times. Everybody liked JaVale. He'll never play in a Warriors uniform again. I you don't you know, you never want to say never, but I don't think JaVale is going to be in this team's plans going forward anytime soon. Clipper Larry in San Jose. Clipper Larry.
Hey, Damon, it's been a long time. It's been a drought a little bit, but hey, thank you so much for always giving the Clippers a little bit of time. So I'm a realist. In order to be a Clipper fan, you got to be a realist, and you understand that this doesn't happen too often. I mean, the chances of the Clippers winning the series is like winning a sweater fashion show with Ray Ratto. I mean, it's just not going to happen. But hey, we're going to have a great Easter. We're going to have a great game. Either way, I don't think you know, the Clippers might have a small chance, but it's going to take a resurrection or, gosh, a closet full of colorful sweaters to make this happen, man. Hey, you guys have a great Easter. Go Clippers.
Thank you very much, Clipper Larry. Appreciate you. I feel two sweater jokes is one too many, at least,
no,
right?
No, three too many.
888-957-9570. More your calls. We don't have another guest after we talk to the next individual who is waiting patiently.
John Dickinson, super reporter, big game bounties, boots on the ground. John Dickinson, super reporter, where will he be now? Let's go out to J.D.
See, we know where he is. He's at Staples Center getting you ready for game three tonight. Let's get right to brass tacks, J.D. Did you cop one of those hot Clipper t-shirts? That might be the best sports t-shirt of the year. Seriously, running a little 31 in a We Believe troll job. I like it. I endorse it. I support it.
Yeah, it's all in good fun. I will not be taking one of those, though, however. No, not in the plans for me. It's I've got enough jammed into my suitcase as is, getting down here for 4 days. I don't have room for any of that kind of nonsense.
Not to mention you never you know what where you eat, if you know what I mean, my friend. Let's talk about how this game sets up for tonight. I know that everyone has been asking players what they're expecting. What are you expecting out of tonight's matchup?
I honestly don't know, and I usually have a feel that the Warriors are going to bounce back. They're going to play well. You know, they're going to even win. Certainly, the better team in this series, but being around them as this thing has unfolded and today, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if they come out and win by 20 and control the game from the start. And Kevin Durant shoots 20 shots and knocks down 12, 13 of them and gets to the free throw line and goes for a game-high 40 points. It wouldn't surprise me if he comes out and he shoots eight times again and we're, you know, having the same conversations that we've had the last couple of days. So I honestly don't know. It feels like something is afoot with this team. It really does. Every time they lose, you're just kind of left with the impression that they don't necessarily like each other, or you wonder, you know, and they're getting sick of each other after this long run or the last 3 years with Kevin Durant in the fold as well. So I typically would have a better answer, a more confident answer, but to be perfectly honest, I don't know. I think it's kind of a coin flip game, and it really wouldn't surprise me if maybe it's got to get a little bit worse before it ultimately gets better in this series for the Warriors.
In what ways have you seen this sort of growing dynamic tension manifest itself? Because, you know, David West referred to it last year. Is this significantly worse than last year, in your opinion, or is this about the same?
Yeah, you know, I just think there's, you know, times like Draymond Green, you know, before halftime in the game. I think it's manifested itself more on the court, Ray. I mean, you know, in game two the other night, I think, you know, the obvious incident back in Los Angeles in November between Durant and Draymond Green. There's times this year where, you know, Curry has clapped for the basketball, or there's times where Durant's taken a shot and there's, you know, body language where there's others on the floor thinking, well, why did he do that? There's body language when maybe Curry will have a bad turnover that's different. It just seems like they react differently to the mistakes. Almost, you know, it's, you know, when you're around somebody a little too long, you start to notice every single fault. And when those faults actually occur, you almost anticipate them and they bother you, I think, a little bit more. So I think there's been instances this year where, it's just somebody will make a play, and the reaction from whoever else is on the court is like, oh, great. That, oh, of course he did that. Of course he took that shot. Of course he made that, you know, ridiculous pass. And then I think it has bled over, although I don't typically think this necessarily matters. I think it's bled over in the overall demeanor in the way that they've, you know, interacted and dealt with the media, because there's been more things that people have seen. So there's been more questions about demeanor and the like. And, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, in the sense that I think the answers to some of the questions show you that things have hit a little bit close to home with some of the frustration that's been shown there.
Andrew Bogut gets the start tonight, obviously, with the Cousins injury. I believe that Looney will play the lion's share of the minutes at center. Do we see Draymond Green slid to the five tonight?
Yeah, absolutely, because the Warriors' best lineup is still Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala, and Draymond Green. That unit, that small unit, is still among the best in basketball, and it's still a unit that they can go to if everything remains on schedule to try and flip the game either in their favor or extend a lead. I mean, Steve Kerr went to it with 6.5 minutes to go before halftime in game one. He typically doesn't like to play that lineup more than maybe, you know, 3 minutes, 4 minutes at a time. He'll do it to finish a game. He'll do it when he wants to change the complexion of a game. I think a big key for the Warriors, and this is where among the many reasons that game two got away from them in the second half, was that their rotation got off schedule. And one of the things I always notice when anything gets off schedule, you have Curry pick up four fouls, all of a sudden he's going to the bench, he's coming back at an unusual time. The Warriors have to keep the game on schedule as far as who's in the game when, so they can go to that lineup at specific times and have everybody available. So I think that is something to keep an eye on moving forward here, is does the game get off kilter or not? Because for whatever reason, you take somebody away from the Warriors in game or you know, in a series of games, if somebody has to sit out, and it all gets far more out of whack than you would think for a team with the overall talent level that they have.
Warriors got Game 4 coming up Sunday at Staples Center at 12:30. Game 5 will be back at Oracle on Wednesday next week, 7:30 tip of Game 5. And if there is a Game 6 in this series, well, I mean, hell might freeze over. So we'll see what happens here tonight. It's a big one. Thank you very much, JD. Great to check in with you. Appreciate your time, as always. I saw that when you were landing, you gave us a little aerial shot of the stadium that the Rams are building. That thing looks spectacular from the air already.
Yeah, it really does. I didn't realize, you know, I knew how far along it was, but the design and the outside was very cool with that, you know, atrium kind of coming out from the bowl. So, yeah, different and cool. And yeah, I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't seen it myself from 30,000 feet.
Warrior reporter, aerial photographer, John Dickinson here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you, John.
All right, guys, take care.
JD, the man down at Staples Center.
How does he have no room in his suitcase on a four-day trip?
I don't understand.
Does he pack 12 pairs of underwear?
Scuba gear? I don't get it. I have no idea.
Or does it just steal, like, you know, soaps from the hotel?
Maybe he's got a wonderful thousand-count, like, W Hotel type of robe that he steals, but then I think about us here, and there's no way we're putting up JD at a W, so I don't think the Best Western has the type of, you know, hotel robe that you look to steal. So I have no idea. Maybe he's a poor packer. Maybe he's a terrible packer.
Or either that, or he just throws his stuff in a grocery bag.
Yeah. I can pack anywhere. I don't care how long we're going. I don't care where we're going. I can pack for any destination on planet Earth inside of 25 minutes. And I can do it pretty efficiently. Very proud of myself.
I don't pack. I just wear the same thing day after day.
Lovely. This is Scott Martinez. Scott, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Well, first off, I just want to tell Ray, I don't even have 12 pairs of underwear in my dresser at home. So,
well, I just want you to know that I didn't care.
You know, it's kind of funny. The Warriors score 131 points, and probably 95 games out of 100, they win that game. They stopped playing defense. But the bottom line here, it just, all this talk just reminds me of that old war movie, Tora, Tora, Tora,
when they got the commander of the general, the admiral of the Japanese fleet up, and they just brought on Pearl Harbor and said, "I fear we have just woken the sleeping giant. Warriors have taken this thing in five."
Look at you with a Torah, Torah, Torah reference. You want to call us next week in the NFL draft and try to work the sand pebbles into that in some way? Outstanding, Scott. Thank you very much for the call. Torah, Torah, Torah. Yeah, okay. Look, I do. I really think that the Warriors tonight are going to come out and impress us with this victory. Now, maybe they don't impress us and it's only a one-point win. You know what? It's the playoffs and that officially tips the math in your favor, which means things are good. But I would like to see them save a little face tonight. Earn a little respect back. And I don't know if it's going to be the respect of Twitter that they get back. I'm talking about the league. I'm talking about putting a little fear back into the Clipper organization. They should feel outgunned, outmanned, out everythinged, because that's who they are. That is the reality of this matchup. They are taking it everywhere except for maybe pure head coaching acumen. That's how much credit we'll give Doc Rivers. But, man, they have, without a doubt, laid the groundwork to be one of the real teams you got to be concerned with in the future going forward. If you are a big-time NBA free agent, how good do the Clippers look to you? They got every piece that you'd want to surround yourself with, and they got the money to spend on you if you're a superstar. That's got to be the best opportunity for anyone looking to jump into a good situation in the NBA coming up. When we come on, yes, Ray.
No, no, no. Go ahead. It wasn't going to be a compelling point.
Because we're against the clock. Because I see Elena, she has prepared a 5 before 5. We are ready to go. We've got that for you. And then one more hour until Warriors Live. We still have to talk about that Arizona hype video. We still got to try to come up with a hype video, if we can, or at least a little hype radio for the Sharks tonight. They're facing elimination. And we need to talk about the three most influential sports people here in the Bay Area. And it's not really who's on the list, it's who's off it. It's fascinating. Stay tuned. Much more on the way. 5 before 5 next here on 95.7 The Game.
Some things you need to know. Some things you want to know. It's 5 before 5 on 95.7 The Game.
It's good to have you along. Ray Ratto along with us today. Elena Matzorkis along with us today.
Hey.
The headlines, the deadlines, and the stories that slip through the cracks. 5 before 5, brought to us by our good friends over at the California Academy of Sciences. I hear Dino Days are upon us.
They are. Also, get this. So it's Thursday. They do the nightlife thing every Thursday. That's
yes.
Open late for people over 21. You can drink. There's a DJ. Tonight is a goat life. They're going to have goats. They are for petting, they're going to have goat cheese for tasting, and it's all going to be about goats tonight at the California Academy of Sciences. So if you're done watching the game early or something, you want to go check out Goat Days, that's got to be hilarious.
They're going to have Tom Brady, Joe Montana there?
Maybe. Maybe Jerry Rice.
All right. Okay. I like it.
Yes.
Number one.
So I had a good day today. And you guys know why. Oakland A's and Chris Davis have agreed to terms on a contract extension through 2021. We know that Chris Davis wants to be in Oakland. He's made it very clear that he wanted to stay in Oakland past this year in 2019. And so I think that it's a win-win-win for everyone, because finally the fans get something to be excited about. The A's have signed somebody to an extension. And the A's are also doing some nice things over the weekend to celebrate the signing. They're doing 2-for-1 tickets for the entire weekend series against the Blue Jays. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So you can buy tickets 2-for-1, and $2 per ticket are going to benefit the Make-A-Wish Greater Bay Area.
That's good. I remember what Chris Davis did with the Make-A-Wish kid last year, where he signed the kid's jersey.
Well,
then
actually,
he went out and had a hell of a game.
The kid signed his jersey.
Oh, that's right.
And
right.
Then he went out there and hit not just one. I think he hit 2 home runs.
Yeah.
And he was actually had the kid out again this season, too. So
fantastic.
They've kept to this relationship. You can also buy exclusive KD2 t-shirts on Friday night. That's tomorrow night at the Oakland A's Community Corner behind Section 218.
Well, are you getting like $5? Off everything they say. I don't care about what they're selling, but I'm very happy that Chris Davis is staying with the Oakland A's. A's fans need something to be excited about. I don't know if this is going to be a harbinger of we're now extending guys around here and we're going to keep everybody in town for a real long time, but it's a great deal for Chris Davis, who's now richer than ever. It's a great deal for the Oakland A's, who are paying, you know, $10 million less to a guy who hits more home runs than Bryce Harper does. And it's good all around. Happy days for the green and gold. Go get your 2-for-1 whatevers.
And it's good for Make-A-Wish, which is where
very
I was going
good
with that.
For Make-A-Wish. Yes.
Number two.
Oh, hold on. Well, Ray.
No, sorry,
Chris,
Ray.
Chris Davis really should have just bought the kid as a good luck charm.
That would have been nice.
Well, no, it's a failure foresight. By the way, apropos of nothing at all, Joel Embiid is not playing tonight for the Sixers.
Woo-wee. Whenever they say, you know, it'll be a game time decision,
it's nearly game time. They made a decision.
Wow. Okay. Embiid not playing against the 76ers or the Brooklyn Nets tonight.
That should be a good game. So, number two. Yesterday, White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson hit a monster home run up Kansas City's Brad Keller and a monster bat flip to follow. So, as is tradition, Keller drills Anderson in his next at-bat. Bench is clear. After the game, Anderson says he won't change anything about the way he plays. He's planning to give the fans a show. We know Major League Baseball, their whole theme this year is...
just let the kids play.
They want, you know, they want this stuff. They want the antics. Bat flips, yay or nay?
Yeah. I mean, put a little emotion in baseball. Whatever draws more eyes to the game is exactly what the game needs. The beauty is Major League Baseball is going to be the home of guys who change slowly or resist change as much as possible. This game is ingrained in stuff that us as fans just don't know about. So it will be a slow change coming. You're going to see guys who are full... you know, I'm out for blood if you show me up. It's going to be a slow change, but the fans are asking for it. Baseball has essentially endorsed it. You'll never see 100% of the players buy into it, though. And pitchers are always going to be upset about guys showing them up after hitting home runs. That's never going to change.
Until the players are uniform in their dislike of the beanball. This is going to happen, or until somebody gets a fractured skull.
By the way, I have no numbers to back this up.
Perfect.
I have no numbers to support this, but right. I've always believed that one of the greatest things about not having a DH is your pitcher has to face the music.
Mm-hmm. But the pitcher doesn't face the music.
Look, if you want to bean my guy, but you got an at-bat coming your way, that next bean ball could have your name on it, sweetheart.
But
I know
more
you
likely,
don't want to give a free base to a pitcher. I get it. Their ineptitude to get on base is supposed to be the shield that prevents them from getting involved in stuff like this. But I don't know. I don't like it.
I don't think that's it, though. I think what it is if you throw at my good guy, I'm throwing at your good guy.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's going to take a catastrophic injury, period. That's it. Nothing short of that will change this.
Right. Or serious fines or suspension.
No, they won't. That,
multiple
they've tried
games.
That before. It doesn't work.
I mean, a real suspension. 10 games. Real game. Real suspension. What is the background noise that I'm hearing? What's going on?
There's a lot of people outside.
Well, tell them all to shut up.
Well, I'm in the
how
middle of segment,
they talk
so
and
I can't
we
tell
shut
them.
Up.
Yeah, no.
No, we could do that.
Okay.
No, I think... no, someone's going to have to get seriously injured for this to matter to players.
That's a shame.
Because they're the ones who are going to have to change this.
That's a shame.
Number three.
We've got some history in the making on Jeopardy. And this time it's a Las Vegas sports bettor, which is a little bit interesting. Rado, am I saying this right? James Holzhauer?
Yes.
James Holzhauer. In last night's Jeopardy, he topped his own single game's winning mark. It's his 10th straight victory. And he's making more money in each single game than anyone ever before. He keeps topping himself and topping
himself.
Right,
he's setting a new daily take-home record.
And so he's already second on the show's all-time regular playing winnings list. That's behind only Ken Jennings, which we all remember went on forever and ever and ever. So, I mean, how long does this guy keep going? Ray, I know you mentioned him yesterday.
Well, the two interesting things, and both of them came out of a story in The Ringer today. One, he's the top four. He has the top four places in daily wins. I mean, he's raced past the old record of 77 four times in this run. And the reason why is, well, A, he's smart, as most people who get to that round are. And B, he's mastered the buzzer. Because unlike almost all other game shows, the buzzer doesn't get activated until Alex Trebek stops talking. And then they have a mechanism by which you know, they activate all three buzzers, and then you've got to hit it. And this guy has practiced the buzzer based on a book written by another guy who mastered the buzzer.
Really? So he is wicked smart to begin with, and he's got the best trigger finger.
And he's trained himself to have that trigger finger. Plus, the way he plays, he doesn't play down the column. He plays the big money stuff early, hopes he hits a daily double, and he bets an extraordinary amount of money when he does.
So,
like yesterday's show, all 40 times he rang in first. He got the question right. So you have to know that much. But part of the reason why he got so many opportunities, because there's only 60 opportunities on the two boards, is because he's in with the buzzer before anybody else.
Be quick on the buzzer, kids. It could pay off later in life. The only time anyone has been this good over the an episode of Jeopardy is Bill Murray in Groundhog's Day, where he gets to memorize the episode because he's seen it so many times. I mean, this guy is something else. And I actually DVR'd Jeopardy.
Nice.
Like I pressed record on Jeopardy tonight after reading that Ringer article this morning.
That's awesome.
Number four.
The NCAA has put my alma mater, Cal Poly, on a 2-year probation after an investigation concluded the school did not properly monitor its book scholarship program. So basically, the NCAA gives Cal Poly a certain amount of money to allocate to each of its students for books, academic supplies, and they found that between the years of 2012 and 2015 that the cost did not equal the items that they've been investigating. So they're spending money elsewhere besides what they're supposed to be spending it on. But I guess it goes to an average of $174.57 is the amount of money that it's exceeding. Is this a fair move by the NCAA to suspend or put probation for Cal Poly for 2 years for this?
Every single time Kentucky gets in trouble with the NCAA, UNLV gets 3 years probation. Jerry Tarkanian, ladies and gentlemen, this is insane. This is stupid. There is not a huge extra benefit intentionally being handed to student athletes. There is a math problem that was handed to student athletes that leaves them with a whopping price of dinner for two with a bottle of wine. I mean, it's so stupid, and you're going to rob kids of their collegiate athletic accomplishments in their names in the record book from Cal Poly? I mean, the NCAA is the Edsel of governing bodies. It has no place in modern society. It is the opposite of state of the art. It's time for it to go the way of the dodo and be replaced by a true governing body that can figure out the right way to do this. This is ridiculous.
Oh, no, they figured out the right way to do this is pay nobody, occasionally punish somebody who gets in, you know, who annoys them, and cash in every year. I mean, the NCAA is a billion-dollar industry for one reason and one reason alone. They're really good at making money.
Well, so, you'd be really good at making money, too, if you didn't have to pay a workforce.
Well, that's true. But beyond that, once you recognize that that's all they're in this for, they're incredibly efficient. They don't care about students or athletes.
That can be proven time and time again with their decisions.
So once you recognize the fact that they're in it for themselves. I mean, this is a group of athletic directors working for athletic directors on behalf of other athletic directors. Then they're brilliant.
And, like, what are you going to go after Cal Poly for? With, like, an intramural ultimate frisbee team? I mean, what the hell?
Because going after the University of Tennessee means lawyers.
You're right about that.
I mean, just, you know.
Poor Cal Poly.
It's the lowest of low-hanging fruit.
Amen.
Amen.
Number five.
It's almost five. This is number five. This is five before five. And
it's
today
five.
Is National High Five Day. So big in sports, high five. Could have originated from sports, but just high five your friend.
High five. I'm giving
you
a symbolic high five right through the window
right
now.
High five?
High five everyone.
And it's 5 o'clock.
High five.
I'm giving you a mid-range one.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.